Hey y'all, are you looking for Clarilla? Some chocolate superfood with organic vanilla. Food-based vitamins keep you a healthy fella. Use your wife's credit card, don't even have to tell her. Go to Natural News Store, that's what it's there for. Get your superfoods, herbs, and a lot more. Feel young like you did before, and let Mother Nature's medicine work it like it's there for. I know you care for your health, therefore. Don't eat those GMOs, throw them out the back door. Don't stay poor with your diet if it's killing you. Enjoy your life with nutrition that's filling you. We got freeze-dried fruit that's organic. Super clean, superfoods, best on the planet. Blueberry, strawberry, even pomegranate. Yeah, it's ready to ship, and if you buy it, you can have it. Yeah, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Check out store.naturalnews.com for all your organic supplements and superfoods. Or call 888-959-6415. That's 888-959-6415 to order now. Coconut, maca, spirulina, goji berry, superfood protein.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created WebSeed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WebSeed.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring throughout the land.
Welcome. This is the Know Your Rights Hour with co-hosts, Doctor, Attorney and Author Mayor Eisenstein and Vaccine Rights Attorney and Author Alan Phillips. Coming to you live Monday evenings on blogtalkradio.com at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, 7 Mountain, and 6 Pacific times. Proudly rebroadcast at naturalnewsradio.com on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Central, 11 a.m. Mountain, and 10 a.m. Pacific times. We welcome your calls during the live show. That number is area code 646-478-0772. That's area code 646-478-0772. And you can email us with your questions or comments during the week. Those email addresses are mayor, M-A-Y-E-R, at homefirst.com, mayor at homefirst.com, and attorney at vaccinerights.com, attorney at vaccinerights.com. This is August 4th, 2014. I'm Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips. Good evening, Mayor. How are you doing?
Oh, my dear friend Alan, I'm absolutely doing wonderful. It's been raining almost all day here in Chicago, on and off, but that's okay. Sometimes, you know, we need some rain.
This time of year cools things off a bit, I guess.
Exactly. I think that obviously the big news this week is the whole Ebola, And I'd love to hear your take on what your thoughts are as to why the Center for Disease Control, who's worried about if a child hasn't had a vaccine and someone comes down with measles, they won't let them go back to school. But yet they have no problem bringing two Americans back to America where we've never treated Ebola, we've never had a case of Ebola, but yet they feel compelled to bring them back to the United States.
Well, Mayor, I tell you, it sure raises some questions. I have had a busy weekend and a busy day today, so I've only been able to sort of look at all this in a cursory fashion, but that sure seems questionable to me. Of course, the conspiracy folks are going wild over this, and for good reason. You know, a lot of the so-called conspiracy theories of the past have been proven true, you know, borne out. Not all of them, of course, but many. And there is documentation from years past from people who have been bold enough to come forward and say things like we need to reduce the population of the planet by some substantial amount, different figures in different arenas. And some people seem to be postulating this in sort of a hypothetical realm, but others reportedly at least have come out and said this is what needs to happen. And so it's disturbing. I used to roll my eyes if I did anything at all when people would talk about population reduction. It was just too far out there for me to consider as a real possibility. But I have keep seeing more and more information over time that points to this as quite possibly a very real agenda that could, to one degree or another, include vaccines. So I don't have a position about whether Ebola is a population reduction mechanism. It certainly is off to a horrible start of reducing population in Africa. The reports I see use phrases like out of control, which is really disturbing. And if Dr. Lynn Horowitz's work from, what was it, maybe back in the late 80s, early 90s,
right,
you know, researching, suggesting that AIDS and Ebola are both man-made viruses, whether, again, the release in the wild would be something that was deliberate or accidental. Regardless, this looks like a very dangerous disease, and it seemed to me the prudent thing would be to contain it as much as possible, not to bring people around. I mean, do you know of any reason, you know, medically, why someone might, you know, there are certain conditions that people can have in certain locations where they would really be benefited by being moved to another location where hospitals have better facilities to treat a particular illness, accident, injury, what have you. Do you think there's any possible basis for that, for bringing someone with Ebola into the U.S.?
I'm going to speak not like a lawyer. No. I'll tell you why. Because we've never treated a case in this country ever. And the mission that the doctor and the nurse were on was part of, I can't think of his name, it's Reverend Billy Graham's son. And they have set up the most sophisticated, the finest Ebola treatment hospital in the world, in Africa. Why would you bring someone here unless you had another agenda? And I can tell you what I think the agenda is. August is the Center for Disease Control National Immunization Awareness Month. And they did a survey in a doctor magazine called Clinical Advisor. It's a very pro-pharmaceutical, pro-vaccine journal. This is July 2014. And they were asking doctors to gauge their experience with vaccination for children. And here's what he said. Here's the question. How often do you encounter concerns when discussing childhood vaccines? Only 5.6% never, 13% rare, 45% sometimes, 35% frequently. So you put together 95% of people had some type of concern. Only 5% didn't have any concern at all. And I found that really interesting. And that's even with all the propaganda about the safety of vaccines. 94% of parents still had some concerns. And what the problem that I see is the CDC is trying to promote this agenda. I can't believe they let the survey out that they're safe, people want it. There's only a couple of groups of these anti-vacciners. It's Dr. Andy Wakefield, and it's the playmate Jenny McCarthy. You know, that's the only reason why people aren't vaccinating this country. Well, if that's true, kudos to you, Jenny, and kudos to you, Dr. Wakefield. You've had a tremendous impact in this country that you were able to get. Even some of the most popular politicians can't get more than 54, 55% of the vote, and here you were able to get over 90.
It is absolutely amazing, and the CDC and other pro-vaccine people must be really nervous about
exactly. And
you know,
I think
effectiveness.
My contention is, and it's obviously conjecture, but I was led to believe that this doctor is critical, and that's why he had to come to America. Then when I see him walking out of the ambulance, and in my 40-plus years in medicine, I've never known a critical patient to be able to walk into a hospital. You know, it just nothing makes sense here, except that they're trying to ratchet up the fear among the population. They're going to come out. These two people will live, even though they've said that 90% of people die from Ebola. Then they're going to say it was a great treatment, but thank God we're going to have a vaccine shortly because we were lucky to get these two people to live. And but the next time it happens, they're not going to live. You know, and then you saw they had cameras within 15 or 20 feet of, because they now have this theory that it's not airborne. You know, I nothing ever makes sense. And then they put it into an isolation unit, even though all the data on Ebola, and, you know, I'd read a lot about Ebola this week, is that it only grows in dark, moist environments. Sunlight kills Ebola. But it obviously kills it better in the dry places, like it would be like Arizona, Las Vegas. Dry and hot kills Ebola. And that's why when they talk about it always in all the movies, it's in the caves, those caves that they find the Ebola virus.
Well, I see some different information, but it makes sense because, you know, I was just talking to earlier today my older son is a young adult now, heading towards the higher end of 20. He'll be 21 this fall, and he knows what I do in this issue, but he's not particularly immersed in it. He's not, you know, picked up the torch or anything like that. And yet I mentioned the Ebola thing just because I'd seen so much of information on it, you know, floating around right now, and he says, oh, yeah, it's all over the social media and you know, he's among the age of people who are the experts on social media. They live on their cell phones and internet, you know, young adults these days and teenagers to a very large degree. And he mentioned that the discussion is all over the place. And that just sort of suggests to me, reinforces what you just said. By bringing someone here, you raise a question and debate. Everybody's going to have opinions about whether they should do it or not. But the point is that it gets a huge amount of attention on the existence of the Ebola, on the problems going on in Africa. And I have seen at least a couple of different articles talking about vaccines. They're, of course, fast-tracking vaccines. Which would be, you know, from a mainstream point of view, and if there weren't all the concerns we have about vaccines from an alternative, so-called alternative point of view, that would certainly be the prudent thing to do if vaccines are generally safe and effective and there is any chance of this really horrible disease spreading around the world, you'd want to have a vaccine. I even saw one article, though, that said there was disincentive to develop vaccines because there wasn't a market for it.
They're making a market now. Fear.
Well,
that's the market.
They'll
it's kind of interesting. There was a mudslide, I think, in China, which killed 500 people. No mention on the media. Yet 600 or 700 people allegedly died from Ebola. Allegedly. And I've been watching a movie, The Last Ship, and it's a TV series, and it's pretty good, you know. But the one thing that was, and it's about a virus that's killed 95% of the world's population, and it's deadly if you contract it, and it's airborne. And they go, and this is one ship where They're developing the vaccine on the ship. And that's all that's important to know there. But the best one was that one of the crew members was on one of the missions to get supplies or something, and they had their hazmat suits on. And he gets back to the ship, and he starts developing a fever, and there's panic throughout the whole ship, even though it was unlikely because he wasn't in contact with any people who were infected with the virus. And it turns out he has dengue fever. So I figured that the doctor who they claim has Ebola most probably has dengue fever. You know, I mean, and all these things look alike. You know, you can't tell the difference between one or the other in its early stages. It's only when it becomes hemorrhagic and your blood vessels start just opening up and pouring out and you die, you know, that you could tell that it's, and it's kind of what people died from flu back in the flu of 1918. I mean, you get hemorrhagic, which means you have bleeding into your lungs until your lungs are full of blood and just die. Fragility of the capillaries. And once again, it's always been tied to low vitamin D levels. Now, that's not always the answer, but it surely is one of the treatment plans, even though no one is talking about it.
Well, yeah, and if there's a financial or other agenda involved here, of course, if there's some benefit to someone from this, regardless of the source or, you know, potential agendas or whatever, there's a benefit from this spreading and not stopping, then at least those people with that agenda are not going to promote anything that would interfere with that. Now, this is crazy talk in one sense, you know,
I think it's
so hard for people to understand at least some aspects of the alternative vaccine agenda, because you and I would never do that, and we are all our own first point of reference of what people in the world are, and it's real
right.
easy and understandable for people to say, well, I would never do that, so nobody else would do that, or sometimes people may mistakenly correlate deviant behavior with academic intelligence, and there really is no correlation. For example, criminals exist throughout the academic spectrum, you know, from school dropouts
right.
to geniuses and everything in between, for example. And it's just maybe the nature of the crime may vary, you know, but so we can't just assume because somebody is smart enough to get in and out of law school or med school or whatever, you know, or to be a CEO of a pharmaceutical company or what have you, that they are somehow exempt from being vulnerable to pursuing, let's say, for example, financial agenda over the safety and health of others. And this is something that's not really pure speculation. And I know we've talked about this in the past, but just quick mention. I know at least three pharmaceutical companies off the top of my head that have had multi-billion dollar fines, mixture of criminal and civil fines, and the criminal fines alone being as high as $1 billion, and criminal fines in the hundreds of millions of dollars are common. I mean, these behaviors are not limited to just one or two or three companies, and at least in the hundreds of millions of dollars, even criminal fines at that level are common. So this is an industry, like it or not, folks, that routinely engages in mammoth, enormous criminal activity in its aggressive pursuit of profits. And so we have to accept the fact, regardless of how we as a society got here, we are in a place where there are people, ironically, whose business is supposedly health or helping people achieve health or at minimum to cope effectively with disease or injury or what have you, chronic conditions when that's the case. And yet, when you engage in criminal activities in the healthcare world, you are playing around with people's lives and quality of lives. So, you know, I don't think for a second that there's a majority of doctors or majority of people in the pharmaceutical industry or state and federal health agencies that in any way are intentionally or consciously involved in that kind of activity. But sadly, it only takes a relatively small number of people in key decision-making positions to drive the entire industry for everybody else and drive, to a large extent, people's thinking. Although, Mayor, I want to reinforce what you said a few minutes ago. This is just fascinating and wonderful to me that despite the increasingly aggressive propaganda about safety and effectiveness, necessity of vaccines, that we nevertheless find a majority of parents showing one level or another of concern about vaccine safety. And I wonder if we're starting to see what you and I talked about now, probably months ago the first time, about how at some point the over-aggressiveness backfires on them because people see that behavior, and the behavior itself is inappropriate without it, before you even get to the message. You know, do you want to put your faith and trust in people who are going to be aggressive, vicious, who at least from time to time are obviously not telling the truth because they represent things in a way that is directly contrary to even some of their own mainstream information sources?
And, you know, that goes along, Alan, what you're saying, that a few months ago when the study was out, that they put ads out in order to influence people's behavior and to be more receptive to the idea of vaccines. And at the end of the campaign, less people wanted to take vaccines than before the campaign. I mean, it just really, all the headlines had it, pro-vaccine message backfires. You know, I think that's we're living in a time where they're overplaying their hand. That's my feeling. But I want to get back to something else, you know, because I got a really interesting email, something you and I have talked about many, many times, and I have listened to your podcast about vaccine exemptions, and you talk about religious exemptions a lot. If a person lives in a state that has personal convictions as a choice and has been handing in the exemption with personal convictions, would you recommend a religious exemption instead? Also, a person would switch between the two. What would cause problems down the road if laws change?
Well, I love the question because on the one hand, the 30 or more states, whatever the number is, that don't have philosophical exemptions, I think should all work toward having philosophical exemptions enacted. If nothing more, on the pure, simple, and clearly irrefutable fact that vaccines come with a risk of injury and death, and nobody should be required absolutely to take a product that comes with that kind of a risk. And I think people should have the right in any situation and everywhere. And the reason I say in any situation, because in most states, if they declare an emergency and order emergency vaccines, your philosophical and religious exemptions go out the window. And so, but we should ultimately have the right to say yay or nay in any situation without having to justify it. And that's sort of a ethical position that I hold. As a kind of practical one in terms of the state of the law, the religious exemption, even though you're starting place with school and daycare exemptions and college exemptions, is going to be a state statute and possibly also some state health department regulations. The religious exemptions come with federal First Amendment constitutional rights. The First Amendment has what's called the Free Exercise Clause that refers to the free exercise of religion. And federal law is a higher legal authority than state law whenever they're for those issues that involve state and or federal law. If there's a situation where federal law and state law are in conflict with one another, federal law wins. It's the higher legal authority. And there are some situations where having that additional constitutional right can help. I'll give you one quick example, if I may here, Mayor.
Sure.
In situations where parents separate or divorce and they disagree about whether or not to vaccinate the kids, every state has some sort of best interest of the child state custody law standard. And if you ask whether or not the kid should be vaccinated and you're asking, as a judge is saying, what's in the best interest of the child, you know, the vast majority of the time they're going to go with the CDC, the state health department, the majority of doctors, and so forth, and say, yes, the best interest of the child is to vaccinate the child. It's a no-brainer. But if one parent is exercising a religious exemption, they have federal constitutional rights, and that's a higher legal authority than the state law best interest of the child standard. So all of a sudden it becomes not a best interest of the child question anymore, but rather how do you balance the so-called best interest of the child with the state law, the constitutional free exercise of religion. So there, it can be a very powerful additional right that in some situations is helpful. The other thing, though, is, you know, we live in a largely I'm drawing a blank on the word, but where people move around freely within
mobile society.
Yeah, thank you. Mobile society. Many people are born, live, and die in the same general area, but increasingly people in our world today move one or more times in the course of their lifetime, sometimes across country, even around the world or what have you. But as far as moving around within the United States, some states have philosophical exemptions and some don't. So if you nail down a religious exemption, that is something that is pretty portable. In some states, you have to state your beliefs to exercise a school or daycare exemption. In some states, you don't. But if you nail down that legally sound statement of beliefs anywhere you move in the country, except West Virginia and Mississippi, those two states right now don't offer religious exemption. But anywhere else you move around, if you have that legally sound statement of beliefs in one state, you've got it any other time you need it in any other state or any other situation where something may come up that you need, you know, your beliefs in writing. It's the most portable, the more portable of the two, religious and philosophical, because in some states you don't have that philosophical option. And in federal jurisdictions, and this would be like in the military or immigration waivers, or if you're dealing with employer-required vaccines, in most states there aren't state exemption laws that address that because the state exemption laws apply to students and not to employees. I think there are three states that have state laws for employees, but most states don't. So you're dealing with federal civil rights law. So if you're in any of these areas where you're dealing with federal law, that same statement of religious beliefs. And the reason it's the same anywhere is because what determines what does or doesn't qualify for religious exemption is the First Amendment, the free exercise of religion, and more specifically how the courts have interpreted that with respect to vaccine religious exemption. So once you nail down that legally sound statement of beliefs, that's the most widely usable and available exemption, whether you're talking about school or other state or federal jurisdictions.
I like what you're answering, Alan. You've taught me this quite a while back, and I think I've kind of reinforced that message to my families. Practicing in Illinois, there is no philosophical waiver, but I get a lot of calls from Florida also, where I have a license. And I don't think Florida doesn't have a waiver either. But you're right, the religious waiver is clearly the better one. Well, suppose if you're in a state that has a philosophical waiver, I don't think that violates your or violates, not the right word for it. It doesn't preclude you at a later date using a religious waiver, because for all practicality, or a large part of your philosophical exemption may be a religious belief.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, the wording of the laws varies with, you know, in every state. But, for example, the West Coast states, all three of them have make some reference to something like personal beliefs, and they don't even use the word religion. But that word personal beliefs would include religious objections. I mean, I guess it's possible that somebody exercises a philosophical exemption, they move to a state that only has the religious, and so they change and somebody says, oh, your religious waiver in this state is disingenuous, you're just doing that because there's not a philosophical one like there was in your last state. It seems unlikely to me, as a practical matter, that issue is going to actually come up, but I guess hypothetically it could. But even in that situation, you say, well, I've always had, I mean, if you wouldn't, you know, if it's true for you, I don't advise
right.
people to lie, of course, but you could say, well, I've always had religious objections, but I just didn't want to get into that unless I had to, and so I just, you know, checked the box that said philosophical and not the one that said religious, if that's, you know, how you exercise an exemption, for example, and it may be in some states. So it's not like exercising a philosophical exemption somehow precludes you from later claiming or exercising a religious exemption. It's just that hypothetically it could be confusing. But I think it's sort of unlikely that somebody's going to be, you know, tracking your history like that and trying to figure out, you know, someone would have to really be going out of the way to look for a reason to reject you. Now, there are situations where they do go out of their way to try to reject you. Don't get me wrong. But it seems to me, I hope I'm not naive in saying this, Mayor, but it seems to me unlikely that would happen in a school or daycare context.
No, I totally agree. Well, you know, we have a caller on the phone, but, you know, Alan, why don't we go to a break first and caller of 8935, you can hold on. We'll get you right after the break. And after a break, Alan and I will be right back.
All right.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening. The Natural News Store is now open. Hi, this is Joni Cox with Homegrown Health with some great news for your health and your budget. Visit shopnaturalnews.com to start saving money right now on superfoods like cacao, camu camu, and acai. You'll find coconut flour, coconut sugar, and hemp seeds, as well as detox products like Zeotrex, Oxy Powder, and Nascent Iodine. You'll also find survival organic food supplies and colloidal silver. Both can help you prepare for natural disasters or other events that might threaten your health or safety. As Hurricane Sandy recently taught America, just one storm can knock out the power grid and leave us all scrambling for food and medicine. We've also got amazing herbal medicine cabinets and herbal survival kits. Plus, we're the exclusive source for the all-new Natural Attitude Turmeric Extract. It's a powerful, alcohol-free, liquid form of turmeric with high absorbability. Plus, get free shipping in the USA on orders of $99 or more. A portion of all sales helps fund health freedom and food freedom initiatives. Find all this and much more at shopnaturalnews.com. That's shopnaturalnews.com.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created WebSeed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WebSeed.com.
Well, we are back with the Know Your Rights Hour. Dr. Mayor Eisenstein, Attorney Alan Phillips, and we have a caller on the line. Caller, what is your first name, and do you have a question or comment for us?
My name is Brad, calling from Los Angeles. And it's interesting you were talking about exemptions because just this afternoon I registered my four-year-old son in pre-K at the local elementary school, and he has had basically no vaccinations. I'm going on, you know, what I've learned from you two, and so much of it is a benefit. And so I told them, well, I said, you know, I don't have any record with me. I guess you better give me one of those exemption forms. And she just pulled out some standard exemption forms. There were no, all I did was fill in his name and address and date and my name and signed it. So I guess it's some kind of blanket exemption that really doesn't carry either religious or philosophical or anything else. This is LAUSD. Do you know much about that, their policies, Alan?
Hi, Brad.
Hello.
I can't believe your baby is in preschool. That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy.
I know. I hope he likes it.
Well, if not, you'll homeschool him. That's not a problem. You know what this tells me, Alan, before you give a good legal answer? It tells us that there are so many families and coming to the school board saying that we don't intend to vaccinate, that it's kind of like some of the school districts are kind of just saying, oh, here's the form, just fill it out. I don't think that would have been like that, even though California does have a philosophical waiver. And didn't they enact a law, Alan, in California that you had to go to a doctor to get a lecture on vaccines before you could fill out an exemption?
Yeah, the procedure now, and maybe some of the schools are just not up on that or something, but the procedure now is in the health department created a form, but it's sort of a long story because the new statute they enacted is actually unconstitutional with respect to people who do have religious objections, and the governor directed the health department to fix that in their health department form. And I don't even think the governor has the authority to direct the health department to do that, but the health department responded anyway, which I think was a good thing for them to do. Unfortunately, the form they came up with is still not constitutionally correct. What they've done is to say that if you're a member of a church who opposes all medical care, then you just check a box here and you're fine, but anybody else with a religious or philosophical belief has to check the other box and go get a signature from a doctor. So it sounds like, Brad, like what you're dealing with is the old form that technically is no longer valid, but if that's all they did, I say go with the flow. And it brings up a really interesting point for me because I occasionally will say something to somebody about exemptions, and they'll say, what's the big deal with exemption? I mean, with vaccines, you just go get an exemption, you know, no deal, as though it's always as simple as what you just described, Brad. And anytime it is that simple, I say, awesome, you know, more power to you, count your blessings or whatever, because I see everything from that at one extreme and across the different range of categories that I deal with, school, military, immigration, and so forth. And probably the most complicated procedure I see is with immigration, where they have to fill out a form, which is real simple, but then you have to supply an affidavit that has to contain certain specific kinds of information, including a statement of your religious beliefs opposed to vaccines. There are other kinds of supporting documents that can be either gathered or created that you add to it. And it's just this, you know, it's this multi-piece combination of things. And disturbingly, there's also a fee for the immigration waiver that you pay to the immigration service. Doesn't have anything to do with my fees when I work with clients or anything, and it's like $585. So it's, you have everything from exemptions that are real simple, check a box, sign a form kind of things, to ones where there are just multiple parts and pieces to the process and everything in between.
Well, now one thing, Al.
Yeah, go ahead.
One thing, Al. There was some, you know, more info on the form, but I didn't even look at it. And it seemed like there were some boxes or something, you know. I didn't look at it. And when I gave it to her, she didn't even look at it.
Yeah.
She just picked it up and stuffed it in the folder and said, great, you know, went on her way. And I think part of what you're saying where people are getting used to it, because our other daughter, we gave her a few vaccines. And then we said, forget it. No more. And so we went through the same thing with her. Now she's going into first grade. So, but, you know, the more I learn from your show, the more I think, you know, California, you can't predict what the legislature is going to do.
Right.
You know, it's locked down Democrats from top to bottom, and they love passing all kinds of crazy laws. And I know you've got a bead, and I've seen some of the websites, the legislative bead websites, where you look at what's coming down and what might be coming down. So I'm just hopeful that this trend continues where people, because like I think I heard one of your shows from back where Mary said 25 million parents have elected not to vaccinate their children in the United States. and that's a massive number. And so I just hope this trend of more freedom and continues. But with this Ebola thing, you guys are just talking about. So I will sign off. Thanks for all your help, guys. By the way, I think you have you've got about 100 podcasts on your SoundCloud channel now. That's really a great source of information for a lot of people. Oh. Go to SoundCloud and find Dr. Mayor Eisenstein, and you'll find all kinds of great information there.
Oh, Brad, thank you so much, and thank you for all the awesome work and all awesome help. And wow, your baby is in preschool. Crazy.
I know, first grade and preschool, and we're taking your advice totally to heart in terms of this issue. At first, we were going to do it sparingly here and there, and Angela had the first two rounds of the MMR, and then I said no more. I said, I was learning too much. I said, Olga, if you heard all the stuff I hear from Dr. Mayer and these other people that are on his show, you would just shut down, and that's what we're doing. We're shutting down.
Oh, awesome. So. Awesome.
Your kids are lucky to have you guys as parents. You know, I get to say that a lot to my clients because I have a lot of similar stories where they either started vaccinating and stopped or don't vaccinate at all. And I just, you know, so admire people who have the courage, frankly, and the ability to think independently and come to a decision. And while I have said and still say I support informed choice, whatever that choice may ultimately be, I just find it hard to imagine that anybody who is truly able to look at this issue objectively is going to come away saying, well, I'm going to do all the recommended vaccines. I just find that to be very unlikely. But
I've been alienated from some of my family members because of it. I mean, in certain ways, not completely, you know, like, you know, but
oh yeah, but, you know, I've got family members that think I'm crazy
there.
Too. It's, you know, but that's part. That's, you know, it's sad, of course. And there's a whole separate discussion about how can we interact with people in a way that we enhance the possibility of opening, you know, a crack in their door so that they can get past their own biases. But that's hard stuff to do. And the first step for a lot of us, I think, is just accepting the fact that everybody's entitled to their own opinion. It's hard, you know, when you discover what's going on with vaccines, you want to jump on the roof and scream, you know, from the rooftops or whatever, but people aren't going to hear you unless they're in a place where they can hear you, and many people are just not in that place. And so the question for me anyway becomes, how can I interact with people to inspire them to open that door? That door has to open from the inside, and in my experience, it's really difficult to, you know, knock it open from the outside. It just shuts tighter. So how can we invite them to come out and look at where we are, and rather than just, you know, ridicule us or make fun of us? It's a challenge. It's a real challenge.
Well, thank you all for your work. Well, take care.
Thank you.
You too.
Thank you, Brad. You know, Brad's a wonderful, wonderful man, you know, and he's the one who helps put all the podcasts together for us. He takes segments of the show, and so people don't have time to listen to the whole show, can listen to 4 or 5 minutes at a time. He's done a fabulous, fabulous job. Alan, you know, this is school physical time, and I always like to bring the latest finding of the day. And in the office today, I had a family come in. It was the first time I met them, and they had four children, one, two, three, four children, like from 6, 4, 2, and about a six-month-old. And I got the ages a little bit wrong. And the oldest child, no, they didn't have a six-month-old. They just had three children. The oldest child had pink eye. Was running around and feeling fine, you know. And the mother said to me, she just heard about me, and she's been slowly stopping vaccines. And her two-year-old is the only one that has no vaccines. Her middle child has some, and the older child has all the vaccines. And pink eye, which is allegedly this extremely contagious disease, only the older child is completely vaccinated. The three boys, they're rumbling around having a good time. And she said, oh, they're like this all the time. They kill each other, and then they kiss each other to death. And I found this was an unsolicited comment that I've heard now over and over again, that the unvaccinated children, essentially don't get sick. And you hate to use the word never get sick, but she was the one who used the word, my two-year-old never gets sick. It's only the other two, and the older one has all the vaccines, gets sick more frequently. And none of these were sickly children. But we're talking about on low-level illnesses, that, and if the effect is on low-level illnesses like colds and flu, it's surely going to be on more serious illnesses that the vaccines, which have altered the immune system.
And Mayor, I've heard that story a lot with my clients as well. Parents that have three or more children, they'll say, and you know, the typical case is very much what you just described. The oldest is fully vaccinated. The middle one is partially vaccinated. The youngest one or younger ones, fewer vaccines or no vaccines. And I hear the same thing. It's you know, of course, it's anecdotal. It's no scientific proof. But, I mean, how many of those do you have to hear over 10, 20, 30 years, as you have, you know, in your practice? I haven't. I've been operating a little over 10 years now in my law practice. But you've been listening to these kinds of stories for far longer than I have. And how many do you have to hear before, when you combine it with other more authoritative information, you know, like Dr. King has talked about studies that show that children who get flu vaccines have higher rates of upper respiratory illness, 3 to 4 times as much, for example. Or the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota has talked about research showing that if you get a flu vaccine, presumably, I think they were talking about adults, 2 years in a row can actually lower protection. And there is formal information out there in the mainstream literature talking about this kind of phenomenon, but then we see it echoed over and over again in our practices. And I hear the same thing from nurses all over the country where they say, you know, the first thing they say is, how do I legally avoid this flu shot? But one of the second or third things they say is, and you know what, I never get the flu shot, and I'm never sick, or I rarely get sick. And the ones who get the flu shot are the ones who, you know, take time off every winter because they're homesick. And I hear that over and over and over again in that context as well. So all of these pieces fit together quite consistently from my point of view.
Yeah, it's really and it's phenomenal. I mean, what Brad said is what's happening all around the country. Because what I heard this year also that I've never heard before, when one of my patients hands in a religious waiver, they don't even bat an eyelash, the nurse on the other end, and say, oh, there's other ones in the school that also have a religious waiver. For years, it was the family would be the only one in that school, you know, and now it's becoming commonplace. And I think this is something that's spread. The Ebola may not spread in this country, but I think the waivers are going to spread in this country, you know, which is very, very exciting. I mean, there's nothing more exciting.
You remember back in the 1970s, Mayor, I think it was the mid-70s, maybe 76, give or take, and there was one confirmed case of the swine flu virus, and that triggered, you know, a mass vaccination campaign. So, you know, all they need is one case of Ebola, which is going to be far more worrisome to people than
right.
The swine flu was back in the 70s because of the reported high mortality rate. You know, one or two cases of Ebola, and as you said earlier, perhaps cynically, but I think probably accurately, there's your market. You know, people
yeah.
will line up. When Mayor, a couple of years ago, I met with the state health director here in North Carolina and my now former state senator, and we were talking to them about we wanted to get a law passed that would give people an exemption right during a declared emergency, because the way the laws are set up here, and probably in most states, your routine exemption goes out the window if there's a declared emergency and emergency vaccines are mandated. And to my surprise, great surprise, but pleasant surprise, the response was, that's already our policy. You know, okay, it's not what the law said, so it didn't resolve the issue. That's already our policy. They said what we're concerned about, the state health director, we're worried about people, you know, climbing over each other to get vaccines in an emergency. And I had to chuckle to myself and perhaps out loud later, because I am always thinking from the perspective of how do I avoid vaccines, not how do I get vaccines, but they have to consider the point of view, where you, now that you mention it, it makes perfect sense, I just had never thought about it. They've got to worry about people fighting each other to get to the vaccines. You know, you might recall during the swine flu pandemic, there were news stories on TV where they would show people, you know, lined up for a mile down the street from the drugstore, lined up to go get their swine flu shot. People were really worried. The propaganda was very effective. And interestingly enough then, and it makes sense, that's the bigger concern for, at least at the time, the state health authorities here, than people trying to avoid the vaccine.
Yeah. Very interesting, you know. I mean, oh my God, where is it going to go to, Alan? You know, it's exciting in a sense, but also really depressing that I can't believe that the top scientists don't know this. You know, Mayor Eisenstein is not one of the smartest people on the planet. You know, and it becomes so blatantly obvious to me. I've had incredible fortune to spend so much time with the late Dr. Mendelsohn, and you know, that really shaped my whole medical career. But I just find it, don't the pediatricians, well, they don't see it because they don't see unvaccinated children, you know, but don't the teachers see this? Doesn't someone see this? Are they all blind to this?
Well, Mayor, listen, I've got a piece of information here that I wanted to squeeze in here tonight's show. It's just perfect question for me as a layperson with respect to the medical and science worlds to run past a knowledgeable expert such as yourself. This comes from, it's an email that got passed around a couple times, I think, before it got to me, but there's an article on the internet somewhere. But anyway, I wanted to run this past you because this is one of those sort of more detailed technical medical things that I think you should be, you know, the one to respond to here. So the article, of course, being presented by a anti-vaccine person, so of course they're going to skew it and, you know, criticize these pro-vaccine people. But I'll read you the email, this little piece of the email says here. Wow, this is a new low for the pro-vax propaganda. And here's the quote. His research shows kids vaccinated on time score the same or better than children who receive their vaccinations late or not at all, referring, I think, to academic test scores. And so the anti-vaccine person says, so vaccines actually help develop the brain?
Yeah.
So, you know, this was something, again, that was just, you know, way beyond my expertise. So I thought I'd put this out to you, Mayor. So are you aware of, you know, research out there showing that vaccines actually, if you get vaccinated on time, because they specified on time, that the kids will actually score the same or better than children who receive vaccinations late or not at all?
How to lie with statistics without even
looking at it. This is a trick question, Mayor. I'll just be right up front with you.
Yeah, I mean, no, but I know it's like, you know, that you can prove almost anything if you start with the idea that you're going to lie or you're going to throw out or you're going to skew your data. I mean, that's one of the problems why I'm so reluctant to ever let anyone look at our data. Not that I have it in a massively organized form, but the numbers are still too small. 50,000 unvaccinated children is not a large enough sample to really give you relevance. You can it gives you relevance to having healthier children. That's obvious. Just looking at ear infections, throat infections, lung infection, that doesn't give you a broader perspective. And I think that here's Dr. Mendelsohn, one of his greatest sayings. That doctors and drug companies don't let go of one drug or vaccine till they find a more dangerous one to replace it. And, you know, so let's look at the DPT, which is now DTaP, and it used to be a whole cell. It was made on the whole cell, the vaccine. That's the pertussis, which is the main component as far as really danger for the dangerous disease. So it was a whole cell, and it had lots of neurological problems, but they didn't admit to that until they came out with the acellular form. And boy, I think of Dr. Mendelsohn because he passed away before the acellular vaccine came out. That was about 10 years ago, 12 years ago. And we're now finding that the acellular version is more dangerous than the one they had before. And Dr. King talked about also that measles, mumps vaccine, they aren't the same one. They kept changing them because they had problems with it. And so they kept putting in, but they still called it the same vaccine so that people would think that there's really no difference, which I was shocked when they changed the name to acellular. Well, they thought there was such a breakthrough. Now they kind of don't know what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, that's kind of like, well, you know, mercury in vaccines is not a problem, but we'll take it out, you know, not because it's a problem, just to, you know, appease all you crazy parents. I mean, you know, if it really wasn't a problem, they really wouldn't go to the trouble to figure out how to, you know, make them a different way and all the expense, you know, that goes with that. So, you know, we really hear them talking out of
both sides,
you know,
of their
both
mouth
sides
at the same
them.
Time.
Yeah.
And that, like, you know, I'm really disappointed in Bobby Kennedy Jr., who just wrote a book on mercury. He was interviewed on CNN a couple of days ago, and instead of just sticking on topic, and that's the problem when you have a layperson, it's called thimerosal, let the science speak. He starts off by saying, I'm not against vaccines. All my children have been vaccinated. He's obviously not a lawyer. I don't think he is, because no lawyer would, you know, open up with statements like that. But it's also the problem of a layperson, no matter how good his data is, really not addressing the issue. It's not relevant if his children had vaccines or not. But it's almost like he thought that he can appease the doctors by saying, oh, I'm not an anti-vacciner. Of course you're anti-vaccine. You know, or that's kind of the way Dr. Wakefield started out. And his papers in the late 80s, early 90s, were not anti-vaccine papers, you know, but they found a sacrificial lamb to take this battle up.
Well, I don't blame people in that situation. I've seen this, you know, you see the medical studies that even the ones that criticize vaccines will often start out or finish somewhere by saying, you know, the vaccines are, you know, the greatest thing since sliced bread, but... And they're trying to protect their careers, frankly, I think is what's going
well
on
said.
There. They're trying to preserve
said.
Some credibility. And
right, you said that
it's
many
sad
times.
That we live in a world where, you know, you have to play games in order to sneak the truth out between the lines. You know, how sad that it's not the other way around, that to get a lie through, you'd have to somehow, you know, sneak it through the cracks somewhere. But you have to do that with the truth. But if we do that, and you know, and it's hard to know, it's hard for me to say anyway, you know, in any given instance, what is really the ultimate best call. You know, from my perspective, whatever is the best for all concerned is what we want in every situation, and who really knows what that is. And so this is all new territory for all of us, Mayor. You know, the world's never been in this situation before. We've never had this task. There's no manual to go look up how to do it. So we're all part of a grand experiment on multiple levels. You know, the pro-vaccine agenda, we're all guinea pigs. We're all experimenting with different ways to respond to that to fix the problem. And so, you know, it ultimately is going to take all of us, you know, doing all the different things that we do and paying attention to one another to figure out, you know, what does or doesn't work and move the agenda forward. But I just am really encouraged with your information, again, from earlier in the show that despite the increasingly aggressive propaganda that people are still showing up with concerns, and that speaks volumes about the problems, and it really explains the aggressive, increasingly and ever more aggressive propaganda. It's a sign of desperation.
Exactly.
And for some people, the more desperate they get, the more they, you know, the louder they yell, the more what the message that comes across, not their words, but the message that comes across is, why is this so important? What are you hiding? You know, the harder you try to say you have to get a vaccine, the more, at least some people are saying, if it's all that great, why do you have to resort to this kind of tactic to try to get me to do it? You know, something's not right here. So I hope we keep moving in the direction we're going. Because while the awareness is raising, there's also the issue that, you know, the laws are still changing often in favor of the vaccine agenda, for example. So There's still movement on both sides, so we're
excellent.
A long way.
Ellen, I think we're down to 10 or 15 seconds.
Yeah, we do. Well, Mayor, gosh, great evening as always.
Always.
I guess we got to run the outro music here, and I'll close us down then.
Be well, my dear friend.
You too, Mayor. You've been listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with Dr. Mayor Eisenstein, vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, here every Monday evening on blogtalkradio.com, live at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific time, and proudly rebroadcast on naturalnewsradio.com Wednesday afternoons, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific time. We will see you next week, folks. Thanks for listening. Take care.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring throughout the land.